Hi, this is Sonequa Martin-Green. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
And I'm The Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl podcast, episode 117. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show The Walking Dead from AMC. In addition to reviewing the show, we play listener feedback, so join the conversation.
You can send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewalkingdeadgirlpodcast. Or you go to our website, thewalkingdeadgirl.com/voicemail, to leave a voicemail feedback, and we might send you a Walking Dead Girl t-shirt just for leaving a voicemail. And we do have a voicemail this week that we'll be playing later on.
Before we get started, I want to remind you guys that we'll be discussing every gory detail about the TV show, so obviously there will be spoilers. So make sure you've watched the current episode before listening. Well, this episode was... I liked it because it made me laugh. Because the Gregory's character was the comic relief I needed. I didn't know I needed. He was so funny, and it made me laugh because he kept calling Maggie Marsha and Rick Rich, remember? And didn't even know Sasha was not even part of the team.
And Rich and Reg.
Reg? Oh, I didn't hear that one.
Multiple names.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I really like that. Oh, before we get started, I wanted to tell you guys about what somebody from my school told me what they thought about The Walking Dead, because I have a stage combat class, and the teacher, he watches The Walking Dead as well. He also is a stage combat professional, and he was talking about how much he hated Negan and how his acting stressed him out, like, because he didn't like the fact that he made all these long pauses and how every line was like hit the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And some other kids agreed too. And I was just sitting there all quietly because I was just like raving about how much I liked Negan in the previous podcast. And yeah, it was just very interesting because a lot of people don't like the show now because of Negan, because of how stereotypical he's playing the evil guy. He's being the cliche version of an evil guy.
Hmm.
Which is interesting.
Well, I mean, there's some people that find that Jeffrey Dean Morgan's portrayal of Negan is annoying a little bit. Because, mm-hmm. like, in the last episode, we had a whole episode again of Negan terrorizing Alexandria, and people are like...
And you think about it, what he said was right. What my teacher said, he said, the show was like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Or like an hour, when all the other episodes were like 45 minutes, because because that's what they teach us in acting. Pauses can add about 6 minutes into a scene.
So add enough pauses and you get a long episode.
Exactly. And that's why that episode was so long without the, you know, showrunners or whatever announcing that this was a special show. It's just because he had took so many pauses in his dialogue. And it was all him. So... that added probably like 20 minutes.
So you're saying that it was extra long because they had to accommodate for his extra long pauses?
Yeah. No, you think I'm kidding, but that stuff adds ton. I see so many scenes where people are taking dramatic pauses and it adds so much time to a show. When we're trying to break our one acts down into 60 minutes, usually they're written for over 60 minutes. We have to make everything super short when we're talking to each other because that can cut down on time.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just the theory, but interesting.
Well, one thing I don't like of the Negan character so far is that it's very one-dimensional.
Exactly.
It kind of reminds me of the Abraham character a little bit. When we first saw Abraham, he was this, he came across as this military, oh, we have to go to Washington or whatever. Wherever they wanted to go, and he was this one monotone, like single task character.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, they changed him a little bit, added gave him some more personal feel when he had like relationships with people. But at the beginning, Abraham was like that, and Negan feels like that too, as this one dimensional evil character guy. Because I whenever I watch Negan, I always think, well, how is he going to react when he realizes someone, because I think eventually it's going to happen. Someone is going to kill him, right?
Yeah.
How will this character react when he's confronted with his death? Which is a weird thing to think about, but I kind of like want to see that character because he's so like high and mighty. He's godlike, right? Right now, and how does that godlike character behave when he knows that he's not God anymore and he's about to die?
Ooh, heavy stuff, Dad.
Yeah, but though he's so like one dimensional that I don't see that other side of him. Like I don't see how he's going to react. Like I don't.
Yeah, because that character. Well, I mean, like to be fair,
like the governor had a duality, right?
Yeah, that's what my teacher also mentioned. He says, yeah, the governor. He was a likable guy, you know, he had dimension. You almost kind of feel for him because he had so much backstory and so much variety and what he was doing. You could see the fear when he was still in power and when he was faced with his death and et cetera, et cetera. Of course, that's towards the end of his arc. And this is Negan's to be fair, this is the beginning of seeing Negan. So we don't know. But from what we can see already, I'm kind of bored of it.
Yeah, we need backstory. Yeah. We need backstory of Negan. We need to know who he is as a, like a...
Not what he's done to people, but what has happened to him.
Yeah, like how he became this way and what makes him tick on a, like a... When no one's around.
Yeah.
What does he do? Does he sit in a room with a glass jars full of heads like the governor did? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We saw him. Mm-hmm. We saw the governor.
That's true. Yeah, we never seen him on his own.
The governor, just by showing that scene, you get another side of him. Like he's a psychopath, but he has some personal demons with his daughter, who was a walker, and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So you could see that there's these multiple dimensions to the governor. But Negan only has this one thing. He bashes heads, and he has these smart remarks. You know. So I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see, but I agree with my teacher when he said that he's kind of one dimensional right now. I'm just hoping that he'll get better from here. We shall see. Yeah, overall, I liked the show. I thought it was good. I liked the whole Enid and Carl's storyline. I feel like it's reminded me of Stranger Things. I don't know if you watched the show yet, Dad, but like the music they had was almost the same kind of music they had in Stranger Things. Like every time they would come to a scene with them two in it, they have like do 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 do, almost kind of sounded alien, but it was just like innocence, you know, they rollerblading and stuff. It was really cute. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting to see Carl still grow up in this world, especially after everything he's seen.
Yeah.
You know, and Enid is tough, but she hasn't seen half the stuff that he has, you know, and to still have that tenderness between them, I think is so beautiful.
Yeah, that was a good moment in the show, and it shows that The Walking Dead can do dual plot lines at the same time, which is shocking. Mm-hmm. Makes the episode a little bit more interesting.
You have here on the notes that Jeffrey Dean Morgan's opening credits show Fire with Hot Iron.
Yeah, so in the opening credits, they changed a little bit where they added Jeffrey Dean Morgan as one of the actors in the credits. So when they put his name up there, they have an oven with fire, like an iron, not an oven, but a furnace where they, you know, you would use like to melt steel or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like an iron, an old fashioned iron there, which you use to iron clothes. And I'm thinking that could be the iron that they use, that Negan used to iron Burn Dwight's face.
Okay. Oh, I also loved Jesus's new arc that he's having.
He's getting resurrected.
Yeah. But he needs to do more.
Yeah, I liked at the end where he got back into his Jesus outfit and then hopped in the truck.
That was probably one of the best scenes, is the last scene where they're all like joined up together. I really liked
you
that.
You mean Carl?
Yeah, Carl and
Jesus.
And yeah, he was emptying the scotch. Was that what he was doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
He was, I guess, trying to spoil Simon's, you know, gift to Negan. Like, so when Simon goes to the back to the thing, he's like, hey, I brought you some scotch, and he looks in there, it's all empty. Mm-hmm. Or something. I don't know what he was trying to do.
So let's get into it. We have the cold open with Maggie waking up in
the flowers,
a makeshift hospital. Yeah, she sees the flowers that Jesus has brought.
Yeah, that he left there. And I didn't put in the notes, but basically this is a throwback to season one.
That's what I was just thinking when I watched it. I was like, oh, this is when Rick wakes up for the first time in the hospital and there's dead flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But these flowers are not dead. They're alive.
Very pretty.
Unlike Rick's dead flowers that... I wonder who left those. Was it Shane or...
Was it Shane? I think it was Shane.
Shane left him flowers. I don't know. Maybe. So, yeah, so it's a throwback to that scene where she opens her eyes and sees the flowers. Same as Rick. And then we see the doctor, the gynecologist.
Babytologist.
Babytologist. Obstetrician. Dr. Carson says, welcome back. And he says, I didn't Google this, but I just wrote down, I'm sure it's spelt wrong, but he said, you suffered Brochdeo placentae.
Brochdeo? I was like, going to spell check that. I'm like, what is this? Did you make a mistake?
I don't know. I just typed whatever it sounded like. It sounded like you said you've broken your placenta.
Yeah, but it was like this placenta started detaching from the uterus or something.
Yes.
And you have to be on bed rest. And the thing I don't understand with Maggie is that she's always getting herself into this position where she's a pregnant woman, but she does things that pregnant women aren't supposed to do. And in this episode, she refuses to listen to anyone, even a doctor who says, be on bed rest. Like, Sasha had to convince her to say that, yeah, maybe it's a good idea to stay. And I don't understand her need to just keep moving and just not be a pregnant woman.
Well, because that's not her character, right?
Yes, but when you're pregnant, you have to incorporate some of that into your character.
You have to walk slower. She does walk slower in the whole show.
Yeah, she's always out of breath.
She's walking slow, but still, you know, achieving a lot.
Not enough. I want her bedridden.
Yeah.
9 months now. But yeah, that's not her character, I guess. That makes sense. But when he was explaining the whole situation, she basically had to say, okay, can you say that whole thing again? Because as soon as he said, you didn't lose the baby, she was still being relieved or in the moment of being in relief.
Maybe she thought she was dreaming or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad it worked out and some miracle of television. She saved the baby, but also that they got the whole question out of the way right up front in the first few minutes of the episode. It's like, yes, exactly. Relax. Maggie's alive. The baby's okay. Let's move on now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And actually, they went through a lot of things quickly in this episode like this. For example, which we'll cover as we go through it, but for example, they quickly made Maggie recover from Glenn's death. By the end of the episode, Maggie was completely recovered and moving on.
She was not recovered and moving on. Yes. But she said, this is the mentality we should have going forward. It's not, I'm over it. Yeah. It's like, let's start to think this way.
Let's move on. I'm done. I don't care about Glenn anymore.
Dad, oh my gosh.
Yes, she's basically, they wrapped it up in a nice little bow.
They didn't wrap it up.
The solution is to, we burn people and then we give away my watch. I'll give it to Enid.
I don't know why. I'm like, okay, yeah, Enid was close with Glenn, but don't give away the freaking watch. Save it for your child.
Exactly. Pass it on as like a, you know.
Heirloom.
Yeah, stick it in your butt or something.
Doesn't it have to, what? Wasn't that from a movie?
Yes, from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
This watch, I stuck it in my butt. And I've been keeping it in there all these years.
That's a good impression, Dad.
I had to put this watch, you know, all this time when I was walking around, I had this watch in there. It was just in there.
Oh, my God.
So she could just keep it in there until her son or daughter. We don't know. Do we know if it's a girl or a boy? We don't know, do we?
It's a boy girl.
It's a new transgender being.
Being.
So Maggie, you know, comes out with her Brochdeo placentae disease.
And, Sasha meets her and says, you know, where were they buried? And they go to the unmarked graves.
Who's buried? You know damn well who I'm talking about.
And Sasha and Maggie, they mourn a little bit. And actually, I think I cried a little bit. Like, I got my eyes watered in that scene where they were talking about it.
Must have been the onions you were cutting.
I don't cook. But it was...
You should cook
it was
more.
I think it was... I know. I think it was because I went back to my memory recall of people who've passed away in my life. And I'm like, oh, it feels like everything is wrong, and it's like all emotional, and it's just so sad because
that's how you trigger your tears when you have to act and you have
to. That's exactly the that's the same. Yeah, it's the same techniques, and finally Maggie acknowledges that Sasha's loss means to her, because it's all about Maggie and her and Glenn, but no one really talks about Abraham and Sasha. So like, there's a moment where Maggie looked at Sasha and Sasha was like, and she's like, oh, because they're like, ah, in all sounds, just like that.
Why are the graves unmarked?
Maybe because they don't want the saviors to know who's buried there. Like they were there.
They want to keep it a secret. Yeah. So there's two people buried in a town where people don't bury their dead. So maybe it's even worse that they even have graves. Maybe they just burn the bodies like they said, but later on, we realize that because they're unmarked, Enid screws up.
Accidentally puts the balloon that was meant for Glenn on Abraham's grave.
Yeah.
And Sasha says, what the heck? Where do these balloons come from?
Yeah, Abraham's not a balloon guy. Jeez.
Not a balloon guy. And yeah, and then after they have a little moment, Jesus shows up. And he's so like,
he levitates into place.
Hippie. He's like with flowers. He comes with flowers. Just make a flower crown already. And he comes with flowers and he says, blue flowers inspire strength and calm. That's why she had blue flowers. Green is release. And she's like, oh man, that really gets me in the heart.
Notice that the green is also the color of the balloons.
Green is Glenn's color, apparently.
Yep, release. And so the balloons and the flowers match. Good job.
Good job. And Gregory shows up. Yeah, and he's like, thank God you're alive or awake. And immediately kills the mood.
No, not thank God you're alive. Thank God you're awake so you can get out of here. He doesn't care if they're alive or dead.
Yeah. He says, make sure you tell Rich what we did for you. And then, you know,
Margaret.
Maggie.
I should call you Jesse from now on. Hey, Jesse, how's it going?
Yeah, and so Maggie argues that she says that she should stay because she has to stay for the baby. And Gregory's like, well, it's your fault for getting pregnant. And I'm like, ooh, low blow.
And then, Sasha wanted to jump on his back and just beat him to a pulp. And then, you know, Maggie says, you know, hold up. There'll be time for that later.
Mm-hmm. Well, the guy's an idiot.
I don't know. It's kind of almost they're overdoing it in this episode a little bit.
Yeah, that's why it felt weird.
It feels like it's like comical, I know, but it's almost over the top a little bit because he thinks Sasha is actually one of his own people.
That was so bad. I was like, are you kidding me? I almost didn't get it because I thought he had met Sasha already.
It reminds me of, I don't know how many people listening to this podcast have been watching the TV show Silicon Valley on HBO, but there's this CEO, like who's this head of this huge company, and it kind of, is supposed to be making fun of Google or something, this big company. Mm. But he doesn't know anything about what's going on in this company, and he doesn't even know who his employees are. And then he actually fires them and then rehires them.
Because but he doesn't even realize he fired them.
And he doesn't even realize it's the same people he fired. Like,
wow.
So he says, wow. And then they look at each other like, doesn't he even know who we are? So it's kind of the same thing where this guy is oblivious. He doesn't care. He cares only about himself, first of all, mm-hmm. and his survival. And he doesn't connect with anybody on a personal level.
He says, I'm still recovering. I don't know if you realize, Jesus, but I'm still recovering from a stab wound. I was like, oh my God, this guy.
Yeah, you know that wound that from the last season that everybody forgot about the whole storyline?
Yeah. And the fact that he brings it up, he's such a wuss.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was hilarious the way he said stab wound, like it was a big deal.
It just shows that Gregory doesn't care about anyone, about himself. He's not connected with people on a personal level.
He's a coward.
That's why he doesn't remember names. He doesn't care about names. Yep. He doesn't care about anybody. They're just, you know, I don't know if he's this whole thing about him being a leader and protecting and doing everything for everyone is just an act he's putting on just to.
He's using those people as a safety net to keep him alive.
Right. Exactly.
Basically.
We'll see. I mean, he's kind of being a politician, you know, trying to protect his place in the group.
He keeps offering the job to Jesus, the leadership job.
Kind of. He's tempting him, you know. Well, mm-hmm. And also Jesus storms off at the end of this discussion with and
throws the flowers down.
Throws the flowers on the ground, and it's kind of a jab at Jesus, because Jesus is like, oh, look how nice I am. I brought flowers, and I'm being all this polite.
But all of this is all this means nothing because they're leaving.
It all means nothing because we're being ruled by an idiot. And
yes,
all this stuff is kind of pointless. What's the point of being nice and doing all this crap when this idiot is ruling here?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the first moment where Jesus is kind of he's having a come to Jesus moment, where he's realizing that my role here needs to change in this community. I need to, and there's many of these moments that he sees later on, but this is the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm. After that whole little debacle, we have the main story where Rick is saying he's going to go out to look for supplies for Negan. And it's sad that this is their mission now, to not look for supplies for themselves to help them grow, but to help keep the saviors away. And
Carl doesn't like that.
Yeah, Carl, and he's throwing darts, I'm like, who's throwing these darts? They suck. I'm like, oh, it's Carl.
Because he's blind.
I keep forgetting that life changes when you lose an eye, that your depth perception is off.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's arguing with Rick, saying, I don't see why we have to do this and we have to keep following. And Rick is just saying, you know, you just come, we need you. And, you know, he's making an excuse. Now we know it's an excuse. Who's going to take care of Judith? Because really, he's just leaving. Do you think he had this idea, this plan to go the whole time and take out Negan? Or do you think when he saw the opportunity to, he just took it?
He always wanted to, I think. I think once he saw the head bashing and the deaths, I think that's from that point on. He had this idea put in his head that he wanted to go and kill Negan. And, you know, Carl obviously disagrees with Rick, and this is the conflict between Carl and Rick building up here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It happened a little bit in the previous episode where he was looking at Rick like, you're not going to do anything about the harassment of the saviors. And
he's the only one really that can stand up to Rick because, you know, he's his son.
Yeah.
And he's still a kid on top of that, so he still doesn't think rationally. And so I'm not surprised that he's the one that is the one to actually go and do something about it. Although, you know, the other characters in the show don't like it, but they either deal with it or they wait for an opportunity. But Carl just feels like he can just take it into his own hands.
So what do you think about all these? Because there's quite a few characters that are now have it in their head to kill Negan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There's Carl, there's Rosita, there's Sasha, there's Maggie, there's...
Maggie we're not too sure about.
We're not too sure, but we know she wants to do something.
Yeah, but she's pregnant, so... And also, we don't know about Michonne.
Michonne is trying, because she doesn't know if she's even right.
So I don't understand why Michonne didn't go with Rick.
She didn't go with Rick because she has her own thing she has to figure out.
What does she figure out? We never got that
chance to figure it out, what she's doing.
Because Carl asked her, like, okay, so why aren't you going with my dad? And she says, I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get this thing to work. And Carl says, you know, it's not going to work. And she goes, well, even if I disagree, I still want to figure it out. I'm not sure. Like, she's kind of trying to figure out her way, I guess, in it. And I guess her going with Rick would have been like agreeing with him 100%. But
yeah, she's still trying to figure it out for herself.
Yeah, so by not going, she's telling Rick, like, you know, I don't want to go with you 100% on this. I want to think about it a little bit more. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
She's ambivalent.
Ambivalent. Yeah, she's trying to figure it out. And she tells Carl, like, look, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I have to figure it out. And that's the end of that.
Yeah, pretty much. So, Rick, we don't hear from Rick anymore. So, this is not a Rick story anymore, you know? It's all about other people and how they're going to react.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Rick is out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Michonne and Rick have a steamy kiss.
Oh my gosh, yes! Some intense kissing. And he says thank you. Because I felt like, do you feel that Rick thinks that Michonne doesn't feel the same about him anymore?
Yeah.
Or is he saying thank you for the affection before I leave? I think it's deeper
both.
Than that.
I think it's a little bit both.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
He doesn't know where he stands with her.
Yeah, thank you for kind of reaffirming our relationship with this long, passionate kiss, felt like it was forever, but it was very steamy. Hey, there is this relationship, and they have a relationship, and let's not forget about it. They're a couple, right?
Yeah, but it was nice to see interracial couples for life. Woo! And I was like, that's my mom and dad.
You see a reflection in TV of your life, of your reality.
But yeah, and they have their little pleasant moment and they leave forever.
And then we have another kind of relationship growing. Building, with Carl and Enid. It's kind of an
Enid
awkward teen relationship.
Stuff. She's like, he's like, I'm not saving you. Carl's like, I'm not saving you anymore. And then what did she say? She said, I don't need saving. You can't even shoot. Can't even aim. I was like, ooh. What I joke. Low blow.
That was mean.
She's like, I'm sorry. But yeah, she said that their conversation seems pretty mature for their age group, I guess. But I guess they're in this world.
Yeah. And awkward at the same time.
Yeah, it's awkward. Ugh, that moment before they were going to kiss, so awkward.
So they were talking a little bit about, like, you know, Carl locked her in the armory.
Yeah.
And so I was a little confused at the beginning as to what the hell they were talking about. Then I realized that they're talking about, the conversation was not about saving her from getting killed. It was saving her from having to see Glenn and Abraham's head get bashed in. So Carl somehow magically could predict the future, and he's protected Enid from witnessing the horrors of Negan's bat.
Yeah, because he says, I'm glad I saw it because, you know, it gives me motivation to keep going.
Yeah, what do you think about that? That's kind of
I think
dark.
That is a very, yeah, that is dark. It kind of reminds me of Game of Thrones, how Arya was saying she keeps reciting all the people's names that hurt her family in her head to remind her of who they are so that when she kills them, she could feel the absolute most vengeance as possible, like the highest level of vengeance she could feel. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a similar thing, although it is misplaced because it's dangerous to have only vengeance in your heart because you're not doing it for them, you're doing it for yourself. And that is what Enid confronts him about later on, saying, you know, you're only doing this for yourself.
Yeah.
And is it worth it? And you're going to get yourself hurt because she says, you know, he says, I'll see you around. And she says, you know, you won't. And I think that means that's laced with, you're going to die.
Yeah, you're going to get killed. So yeah. This was basically our kiss goodbye, a goodbye kiss.
The first and last kiss.
Basically, that's what Enid is thinking because she's such a pessimist, right? So yeah. And long gone are the days where Carl would look up to Rick and take everything he said and believe it and do it. Now he's kind of forging his own path. Like, this is what I believe I need to do, and I need to be hardened. And I'm glad I saw that evil, because now when I meet Negan and the time comes, I'll be able to kill him without any regret,
without hesitation. I think.
Because there's no doubt of what he's done and no doubt of how evil he is, because I saw it with my own eyes, kind of thing, right?
Exactly. It's burned into my memory, and the only way he feels like he'll get rid of it is if he kills them. And
but I don't know how he's going to kill him because he didn't bring any weapons, so that's kind of a mystery.
I don't know what he's thinking. Honestly, I was like uncertain until the point where Jesus jumped into the van. Then I'm like, okay, maybe we have a chance. This is going to be interesting. Yeah. Maybe I wasn't excited because I'm like, now is, yeah, team. I'm hoping that Jesus will convince Carl not to do it, not to go through with it.
You know, it would be horrible if Carl goes there and he ends up getting caught by Negan. Yeah, Negan is going to use it against Rick, obviously, right?
Yeah, it's going to use him like Daryl.
And forget about, you know, he didn't make Rick cutting his arm off and stuff. Like, he's going to do bad things to Carl. Just, he probably won't kill him, but he'll do evil things to him just to get back at Rick and say, hey, Rick, you didn't keep your child under control, so it's your fault.
Yeah, this is you. Now you have to pay.
Yeah.
Now so Lucille's hungry.
That would suck. Because I just can't see Carl killing Negan. I don't know.
I can see it, but not now. Maybe when he was older. As he's like, I've been waiting for 10 years to revenge the fallen. You know, like, it's like revenge story.
Yeah. Jesus and Sasha are talking, and then Sasha's trying to figure out Jesus and trying to say, well, you know, why aren't you the leader? You know, what's going on here? How come you're letting this
this idiot run Gregory. This place, because it seems like you have a better handle on what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And then Jesus just replies with, you know, I'm not a leader. I just want to help people. Mm-hmm. And she says, maybe you got to do more, which is a question that's not really asked a lot, because that's a new question. You have to you have to do more than just help. That's a new life question that's brought to the table.
He doesn't want to be the one that's
has to make all the hard decisions.
Yeah, he wants to be the nice guy.
He's kind of like Daryl in that way, where he'll get the job done, but he was a free spirit. He wants to do his own thing.
Well, no, Daryl at least takes action, but maybe a little bit too instinctively. But Jesus wants to be the nice guy that brings flowers and does the nice things. He also is not, I don't know how he can handle evil, right?
Yeah.
He's
Jesus.
He might want to stay away from evil things. Like, I don't know what would happen if he hasn't, I don't remember him reacting when, I don't remember what happened when the saviors sent back the guy to the hilltop, and then, you know, that hilltop guy stabbed Gregory. I can't remember what Jesus did. I think he fought a little bit.
But he came back with, Matt. Oh, who was it that he came? He came back to Hilltop.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't see the whole thing.
Yeah. So Jesus has been, I just not sure what's going to, what would happen if Jesus is confronted with something very bad. Like if he goes with Carl to Negan's place and Carl gets caught, will Jesus try to save him or will we just run? I don't know. We'll see.
No, I don't think he'll just run. No, he's not going to be that. He's going to help him. He's like a very moment-to-moment kind of guy, I feel.
Yeah, so Jesus gives
Sasha the necklace that Abraham has dropped. And I'm glad you put that. It was ironic because I wasn't sure if that was the when he lost it at Hilltop was the moment that he had a revelation that he wanted to be with Sasha. I wasn't sure if that was it, but obviously you fact-checked it, and that's true.
Yeah, so
it's a little Easter egg for the audience.
Yeah, we know that the necklace was from Rosita, and now it's in Sasha's hand. But the funny thing was that necklace he dropped at Hilltop, like you said, was when he all of a sudden realized that, hey, I want to be with Sasha, not Rosita.
Yeah, so maybe Sasha shouldn't get the necklace. Rosita needs to get the necklace.
Right. Or maybe Sasha will be wearing it around her neck, and then she'll meet with Rosita.
Rosita be like, what the heck? And I'll like this like competition.
Yeah, where'd you get that necklace? Yeah. And then Maggie comes in and they talk about
the purpose of burning the dead. And, you know, Jesus explains the concept, you know, we have to keep going. And then she replies with, what do you have to remember them by? And he says, us. And that kind of plants a seed in Maggie's head to want to give away the freaking watch.
I don't think she should have given away that watch. I agree.
Especially since she punched Gregory in the face for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Maggie and Sasha talk, and Sasha just basically says, Gregory's an idiot. And then, you know, Maggie says, no, he's a coward, which is worse. Because people do bad things when they're scared.
Yeah. So if later on Jesus hadn't stood up for them, they might have eventually been kicked out and went back to Alexandria. But as it turns out, they ended up staying there. But yeah, they... So this is building up... building up a story, which is kind of interesting, where Sasha and Maggie are staying at Hilltop now, mm-hmm. right? They're ended up staying there and living there. So that's going to be an interesting twist of events, and we'll see how it goes from there. It's interesting that Negan doesn't show up at Hilltop, but Simon does. So I don't know if Simon actually no. Simon does know how Maggie looks like. So yeah, So
who
they
is Simon?
Simon
oh,
is
yeah. Simon's that guy.
The Negan replacement.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Maggie and Sasha still have to stay in hiding if those people show up.
Yeah. But I don't think they're going to show up in the house every time. I think this was just an introductory type thing.
And if they show up, they'll have warning. So maybe they'll be able to hide, but we'll see. It's kind of, I don't know how this is going to play out.
I know.
Yeah. It's going to be difficult.
It's going to be interesting. Obviously, I don't think they're going to be lasting more than a week there, to be honest. I don't think they'll be able to last for the whole pregnancy there. I think this whole Negan thing will sort itself out before she gives birth. Or maybe on the day she gives birth.
Yeah, it's kind of symbolic. What do you think You say this whole Negan thing plays out. What do you mean? Like Negan will get killed something?
Yeah, like the end of Negan. Like that's the only way. I don't see Negan ever coming out of this alive.
Yeah. Do you realize we only have 3 episodes until the end of the half season?
Till the mid-season finale?
Yeah.
What?
So I don't know
nothing happened.
I know, really, huh? We're still building up characters and stories.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of them, too. This is the part where I said in the beginning, you know, there were some silly moments. This is a silly moment, okay?
Okay, yeah, so freaking Enid's riding a bicycle.
Meaningless plot and device
then,
here.
Yeah, exactly. And then Enid freaks out because there's walkers. And then a car hits the walker into a sign that says, drive slow. And then Carl rolls down the window and he's half blind. He's like, I felt like a drive.
So Carl, the blind driver, or half blind, can't drive, so he smashes into walkers by accident. No, he's did it on purpose.
And he tries
obviously.
To play it off. And the thing is, what makes it worse is that did Enid actually believe that Carl just went out for a drive and happened to run into Carl? I mean, Carl happened to run into her? Because at the end, she's like, you weren't here for, you were just going on a drive. You weren't here for me.
I expected Carl to say, yeah, why do you didn't believe that, did you?
Yes, like that was a joke to play off the fact that I totally ran into a pole.
Or like I'm totally,
half blind.
Or I totally came looking after you because I care about you, obviously. But the way it happened, like she's riding her bike perfectly fine. Nothing's wrong with the bike. She stops because there was some liquid on the ground.
Oh, blood. Oh, yeah.
She sees a pool of liquid and stops and looks at it. She gets off her bike and then she looks up shocked. There's a walker there. It just appeared to be walking out of nowhere. And then she looks around to her right and then to her left. Oh my gosh, walker's here, walker's there. What am I gonna do? And then the car comes out of nowhere. Like, how about hopping on your bike and taking off?
Exactly. How about keep going?
And Enid is not like a stranger to walkers. She's not a wimpy little kid that doesn't know how to kill walkers, right? Because they showed her before.
Clearly, this was just for Carl's benefit.
This is, yeah, it's just for so Carl can come up and pretend to save the day, roll down his window like a cool dude, like, hey, I just came for a drive.
Whatever.
The whole scene was pointless.
Barth worthy, yeah.
But they had to come up with something. But, you know, I just feel like it was just a phony scene, just made up. Didn't make any sense. Anyway, but it happened. And they start walking because the car smashed up. The bike is run over, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that scene. I'm just going to leave it as I have no feelings for it.
Yeah.
But the next scene was actually pretty cool. Maggie and Sasha are having a conversation and they weren't sleeping, were they?
Yeah. I think they were sleeping.
Oh. Yeah. Wake up to music being blasted throughout the camp.
Out of a car.
Yeah. And then they realize, oh my gosh, there are walkers. At first, I thought it was Negan's group coming in because the walkers were so far away, but it was actual walkers. And they were coming in, and who lit the fires? How did nobody see any of this?
Exactly. They're pretty much useless people. They don't have guards. They don't have people in the watchtowers. Yeah. Negan's people did all this, obviously. They came in and they opened the gates while everyone was sound asleep. And somehow they managed to lock everybody in their houses too.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up.
And everybody comes out. And they're just like, what? Huh? What? Huh? Like, geez, man, they're good for nothing.
Yeah, it was surprising how this whole setup could happen, and they could set it light up bonfires, and nobody could notice this. And also the car, as you noticed, was a special type of car. It was just basically the windows had gates on them. So
yeah, they to prevent them from being able to do anything about it. Yeah. And
so this was a purpose-built car from Negan, which he probably used many times before to harass other communities.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And later on, Simon says, you know, we were going to go and help you guys. But you guys took care of it yourself. So do you think the group knows that Sasha and Maggie are there? Do you think they hung around when that happened to watch it unfold?
Could be. Maybe. We don't know. I mean, Simon could be playing coy and trying.
I thought he was the whole time because he said, is there anything else you need me? You want me to know?
Maybe they do know and they want to use that for later on.
Yeah.
To maybe say, you know what I mean? Just, they're just keeping it in their pocket. Like, yeah, we know they're here, mm-hmm. but we want you to, you know, simmer on it. And then we're going to use that later to punish you even further.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Yeah. And this scene also made me upset because Sasha told Maggie the dozens of times, don't do anything. And Maggie's like, I can't leave you by yourself. And then she comes out with a freaking tractor. Okay. And apparently she's done this before.
Yeah. She ran over some kid's Camaro.
Don't mess with Maggie, man. She's always been this strong-willed person.
Yeah. That's her character. And that's why Sasha at the end says to Jesus, you know, I want to go find Negan, but don't tell Maggie.
She will totally jump on the bandwagon and yes. not be good for her.
She'll join her. Yeah. And, you know, Sasha doesn't want that. She wants Maggie to sit put. those are some good scenes with this walker fights because Jesus showed us that he has good karate skills.
Yeah. Well, I was like, whoa, Jesus. Jesus.
Jesus, Jesus. Runs up and kicks... roundhouse kick the walkers and
knocks walkers out with his legs like
yeah karate like moves
Jack Chan. Yeah.
Yeah, very agile person if I might say.
very agile person. Okay, dad.
Yeah. And at one point there was a funny a moment where was it Maggie that spun around and almost killed Jesus? She thought he was a walker.
Oh yeah, no, Sasha. Came around, he's like, oh, she's like, sorry. That was funny. Yeah, I'm he's growing on me. I really like him. I already liked him from the beginning, but I like him even now, even more now. Did we tell the podcasters that we saw him?
We did see him.
When I was moving back to LA and we went to Target.
Oh, yeah. We did see. Yeah, we did tell people.
We saw. Oh yeah.
I think we told them on Fear the Walking Dead podcast, but.
Yeah, if you didn't listen to the Fear the Walking Dead podcast, which I don't blame you for, but if you didn't, when I was moving back to LA, we went to Target to pick up some furniture and stuff or a few things. And as we were leaving to head towards the elevators, we saw Jesus with his girlfriend, which I figured out is his girlfriend that was next to him. And he was like talking to her, like really animated with sunglasses on. And he was coming towards me. And then the light was coming out of the window from behind him. So I was almost blinded. I couldn't tell who it was because I was wearing sunglasses.
He was coming into view just like Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
He was descending from the sky.
I had my sunglasses on, so I couldn't tell who it was until he almost passed me by. And he was and I was just like, yeah.
He was talking in a British accent. He is British, so he wasn't putting on the accent. That's naturally his accent. Yeah, so we saw it. The Fear of the Walking Dead was an okay series. I think the podcast that we did was even better, though. I think our podcast was even better than the TV show, though. So if people
to be honest,
yeah, our podcast was way better than the TV show
because it made us feel better for watching that show.
So if you want to listen to a cool podcast, listen to our Fear of the Walking Dead episodes. They have the prefix FTWD in the front. That's how you can tell which episodes are Fear the Walking Dead. So Enid and Carl, again, we flash back to them, and
yeah, they're walking.
They're walking further, far apart. And then Enid says, "Well, we talked about how Carl wanted to see everything because he wanted to kind of feel the pain, so to speak." And then Enid says, "I think I'd kill him too," meaning Negan, right? Mm-hmm. You do things for the ones you loved. And Carl says, it's not for them. And Enid says, it's for me, basically. And Enid says,
Enid didn't really register that because she says, I didn't need to see it.
I guess she was complaining earlier that you were trying to protect me from it. You know, I could have seen it. I was fine. And now she's saying, well, you know what? I didn't really need to see it. Meaning that I was just kind of putting on an act, like I'm all tough and all that. But you know what? I didn't really want to see it. That was my interpretation of it.
I thought she meant like she didn't need to see it for her to want to still end his life.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, you could be right too.
Enid and Carl continue to walk separately. Enid is crying and Carl.
Why is she crying? Does she think because she thinks that no one's going to be there? Like Maggie didn't make it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then Carl finds some roller skates because obviously you're in the middle of nowhere and someone throws a bag of roller skates. It makes complete sense.
And that's the perfect size.
Perfect size, exactly. And so they put them on and then they start roller skating across the empty road, which is kind of cool in general. And then Enid is not crying anymore, and they are both happy.
They're happy.
And holding hands and joyously skipping along. What did you think of that whole thing?
I thought it was really cute. I thought it was cheesy, but I thought it was really cute.
Yeah, it was kind of an upbeat moment.
Mm-hmm.
The moment that was kind of, we didn't talk about, was when Carl says to Enid, come with me, right, mm-hmm. to kill Negan. And then Enid decides not to go. And I guess her reasoning was because you're not doing it for the right reasons, do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
You're doing it for yourself. You're not really doing it to, you know, get revenge for Glenn and them. You're just doing it because you have some need internally that you want to fulfill. And then she twists the conversation and makes it like, well, I care about you and I don't want you to get hurt, basically.
Yeah.
Because she said, well, how are you going to get away? And Carl says, it doesn't matter, man. I just want, this is a one-way ticket. I'm just
Which
going,
is so stupid.
Yeah. This is a one-way ticket to me killing Negan and I'm done. Which, if Rick finds out, he will freak.
Be like, what the heck, kid? Like, seriously? Get yourself together.
I mean, Rick is doing his part with the agreement to save, mostly for Carl and Judith, right?
Yeah.
To save his kids. And he's
And then Carl's putting himself in that position, like, really?
Yeah. Enid, in her own way, says, you know, it matters to me. I care. Carl tries to kiss her forehead. He makes the first move and kisses the forehead, and then they kiss.
And then he's
lips.
Like, you know what? Let's go further.
Let's go all the way.
Yep. And
can we say, like, Carl's hair is, like, awesome?
Way too freaking long. Oh.
Oh, okay. It's too long.
I was gonna... No, that's, yeah. Yeah, no, it's just cool. It's cool.
Well, he doesn't have a hairdresser anymore.
Oh, but he never got his hair cut by her anyway.
Well, he had, yeah, one time, didn't he? No.
No, Rick was the only one that got haircuts.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying that his hair is getting out of control, really. I mean, it's super long. It's kind of awesome and flowing, but it's, I think, too long. But it's very styled. You notice that? Someone's been blow-drying it.
I know. I think it's just his hair, too. It's, like, very straight.
Really? I think it would be just straight down. But the way it looks like someone's been blow-drying it and styling it. Like, giving it some curls. Yeah.
Maybe.
So we have Gregory, Jesus, and Maggie, and Sasha are talking, and let's listen to this.
I'm not turning away a pregnant woman who helped us. I'm not turning away Sasha either.
Who the hell is Sasha?
They're staying.
You're not in charge, Jesus. I am. I'm the one that has to look after the safety of this place. What are you telling me? You want to call the plays? After all this time? After I set the table here? Say the word. The broken gate? The saviors? The people? All of this can be yours. Only you'd have to stick around for more than 5 minutes. You'd actually have to be a part of this place.
Gregory?
I was just telling Ms. Caitlin to bring up some of her famous rhubarb preserves for you both. It's our way of saying thank you for helping out last night.
It's Ms. Maitland.
You can take them with you when you go. And you should go now, because the saviors could get back any minute.
I'll go, Sasha. But let her stay. We'll call it even on last night.
No deal. But it's been lovely having you here.
Just tell me how we can make this work.
I think we'd need to meet on that one-on-one just to explore.
Go to hell.
Are you actually implying... You know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to tell Ms. Caitlin to keep her preserves.
It's Ms. Maitland.
Like, this guy has, like, no respect for people whatsoever.
And it was creepy that he was implying with Sasha that, hey, if we can meet one-on-one, you know what I'm saying? We can have a little...
Oh, my gosh. That was so gross.
A little private time. And
in front
we can...
of everyone. Like, geez, and does then, he have no, like...
And then he denies that he was doing anything. Like, oh, how dare you accuse me of that? Yeah.
What a tool.
Yeah. And I don't know, I think there's a disorder that some people have, is that they can't recognize faces.
You think he has that disorder?
isn't it really, like, don't you, that's true, right? They don't, there's this disorder.
There is a disease, yeah, you can't recognize faces.
There's a mental problem that people have where their brains can't connect people's faces in a recognizable way. Because naturally when we see someone's face, it's from birth, like when babies see their mother's mm-hmm. face, they recognize, oh, that's my mom. And they make that connection. They memorize the face and they make that connection. And a lot of people can't recognize faces. There'll be like, there are 30, 40-year-old people, and they see someone walking down the street they've seen 100 times, but they don't know it's, you know, Joe or whatever, because the face looks like...
They don't recognize him.
The face looks like brand new person, like they've never seen them before.
Like a stranger, yeah.
It's specifically to faces, which is weird.
Yeah, because they can figure out people based on how they walk or how they dress.
Yeah.
That's how they remember them.
Yeah. And maybe he has that. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it could be like a mental illness and we're making fun of this guy, you know? I don't know. but no, I doubt it. He's
still a douchebag.
He's just being a tool. Yeah, so anything that they try to do to convince this Gregory guy is not working. So Jesus needs to step up.
Yeah, he needs to take over. That's what needs to happen. Like, if Jesus was taken over and then Rick finally got back to himself, they could, like, morph together and then join the kingdom and then take him down. That's what they have to do. They have to join all three places. I know it's going to happen.
Well, can you say, we talked about how there's all these people, like, working on their own behind the scenes trying to get to Negan. Wouldn't it be funny if they all show up at the same time? Like, Carl shows up. And he turns around and you see Rosita there. It's like, Rosita, what are you doing here? And
what the heck?
And then Michonne shows up. Michonne, what are you doing here? And then Sasha's there. Wait, guys, what are you guys doing here? Hey, this is cool. Let's all get together. You know, I'm just like.
And then, yeah, they all take him out together. Rebels.
And then they come back to Alexandria with Negan's head. And Rick just comes.
It's like,
Rick comes out like, what the heck just happened?
It's like a breakdown.
No. yeah. That would be strange, because pretty much everyone's taken things into their own hands. And
yeah.
Rick is running off trying to get canned goods for Negan.
Yeah, so the saviors arrive, and then Gregory tells them to get in the closet.
He didn't say which closet. He just said a closet.
Uh-huh. And then Simon comes up, and he's talking to him, and he basically takes a freaking painting. I knew he was going to take the painting the moment he brought it up.
Yeah.
And that made me upset. Yeah. I don't like when they take... What does it mean when he says cross the aisle?
Gregory says, you know, I understand what you know, crossing the aisle is all about. And crossing the aisle is a term that, they use in politics, you know, in the Senate or like in the government and Congress, whatever, like that room where everyone's sitting.
Yeah.
And having their, political, votes and meetings and all that stuff. There's mm-hmm. aisles, right? And the aisles separate the different parties, the Democrats from the Republicans. And are separated by aisles, not just in U.S. politics, but in general. So crossing the aisle means instead of voting for something just based on your party, it means that you cross over and you make friends with the other, not friends, but you kind of negotiate with the other political party so that you can vote on the same thing.
Making a compromise.
Yeah, yeah. Like instead of just voting no because, you know, our party doesn't believe in it, some people cross the aisle and they say, yeah, let's work together on this.
I thought it meant crossing the aisle meant, oh, do you want to take more than half of our food to make up for it or for something?
Yeah. I think what crossing the aisle meant in this context was that Simon says, Simon says, give us half. Let's listen to the audio clip.
But you know, it all worked out. Because the people that killed them, they work for us now. And they are real go-getters, you know?
It's a shame when things like that have to happen. Yeah. Please, tell Negan I understand the benefits in crossing the aisle.
No reason for that.
No.
Because for now, I'm your Negan. Because that's what Negan wants. But thank you. It means a lot that you recognize what we bring to the table. That's why you're still here. And others aren't. Understand?
No, I understand.
Good.
It is. It's good. It's good.
Anything else you want me to know?
That's good.
Any hitches in the Giddy app I should be aware of. Gregory?
He kind of pokes him there to see if, you know...
Is there anything else he needs to say? Yeah.
So I think crossing the aisle in this context meant that, hey, we had this group that killed a whole bunch of our people, so they were kind of the enemy, but now they're working for us. So they're working for us, so we're kind of all in one group now. We're not opposing each other anymore. We're working together. And Gregory says, oh, yeah, I understand what it means to, you know, work together with the people you don't like. And that's kind of what he's saying. But, you know, Gregory is just saying whatever BS he can just to... This whole dialogue was very tense in general because, honestly, I thought...
I had no idea whether or not he was going to kill him.
Yeah, I thought Simon was going to kill him.
Yeah, I had no idea because I thought, you know, Simon knew the whole time who killed the group and was going to make him pay for it.
And he was just playing with him.
Yeah, because it was so tense that I could at any moment.
Especially at the end when he told him to kneel.
Oh my gosh, I didn't think he was at the end, but I did think that when he asked him to kneel, I think Jesus lost a lot of respect for him.
Mm.
I think I know he already lost respect for him, but I think Jesus felt like if I was a leader, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have let that happen.
Yeah, and that was kind of a thing that the saviors do is to make you...
Yeah, assert dominance.
Yeah, to show you who's boss. And yeah, I just thought he was walking away like, oh, by the way, kneel and I'm going to just chop your head off or something.
Yeah.
I just thought it was going to be bad, very bad for Gregory. And yeah, that's where he mentioned that, yeah, we were going to kill the walkers. So the whole plan, I guess, was for Simon and his group to bring in the walkers and everybody was locked in their houses. So the walkers couldn't get in, but they're going to be sitting there waiting for Simon to show up all this time. And then Simon would show up with his group and just kill all the walkers and say, hey, we saved you guys. See,
this is our service. This is the service we can provide.
Again, with the service, right?
Even though they, because he said something really important. He said, when he's looking at the painting, he's like, management by example.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, just like what we did, we worked our butt off to make an example.
Yeah. Simon mentioned like, interesting. You guys killed all the walkers by yourselves. Interesting. I didn't know you guys had those skills, right?
And like, Gregory was like, well, maybe you taught it to us. And he's like, huh, okay. And I didn't know if you bought it or not.
Yeah. It's like way to turn it around and make me feel good kind of thing. Yeah, so the whole conversation was full of tension, and at any moment you felt like the whole ruse was going to be up, the jig would be up, and then Simon would get killed or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, Jesus, as he mentioned later, saw through the whole thing and says, no, Gregory, you didn't do anything. You're still kind of nobody right now. You're controlled by Negan, really.
The scene was tough because the whole time I was tense because I didn't want them to ruin the furniture in that place.
Because it was a nice place.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then Jesus pulled a miracle and swapped Maggie for Scotch.
Gregory was going to betray Maggie, but did he know that there was Scotch in that closet?
Yeah, he did, but he also thought that Maggie was in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
So once Simon saw Maggie, I mean, he wouldn't think about the Scotch. He would just think, you've been hiding her the whole time. And also, they would have taken Maggie and Sasha, but they would also probably kill Gregory anyway, right?
That's the thing he didn't take into consideration, because he doesn't really give a crap about anything.
Gregory is not saving himself by giving them up. He's just basically giving Simon another reason to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So Simon orders to take the painting. I just want to sit on the painting a little bit. I dug a little deeper. I mean, there's not...
Oh, we have some history on it.
It's not a whole lot of meaning to it, but there was a little bit. It shows a painting of an emperor, which is the same painting we saw in the previous season. And, you know, if you think about that in the previous season, it could be representing Gregory, who's on the horse. And he's kind of the leader and all that stuff. But it turns out that I think that the leader on the horse is actually Negan. So it shows an emperor riding a horse, which symbolizes power, because a horse is powerful, and you're dominating, you're kind of controlling that power. The painting also shows a bird above him with an olive branch in its beak, which symbolizes peace, and it's the peace that the emperor was trying to bring to his subjects. And also in the background, it shows a ship, which symbolizes the military might of this emperor. And it's Charles V, who was the king of Spain, and eventually became a Holy Roman Emperor. And he dominated, he ruled over like most of Europe and also South America.
All before his 20th birthday? Wow.
His reign
What have you done?
Yeah, his reign was dominated by war, and particularly by three major simultaneous conflicts. He had a war with France, a struggle with the Ottoman Empire, and the Germans. So three different kind of factions that he was fighting. And that could symbolize the three places in our story, which is Hilltop, Alexandria, and the Kingdom. And the person on the horse could be Negan, that kind of thing. So anyway, that could be the representation of that. The original painting is in France, so this can't be the original. It must be a copy, obviously.
Interesting. Very interesting. That little symbolism.
We're going deep into the analysis. Okay, so here we have the conversation that follows after Simon leaves. And so let's listen to the clip.
Honey, I'm talking to Jesus.
Stop.
Why are you even defending her? We're here right now because she and Rich didn't handle things like they said they would.
The Saviors tried to kill you.
That was a misunderstanding. And as soon as the Saviors leave, we'll get them the hell out of here before something bad really happens.
Stop! They're staying. Or do you want to make it public? You want to make the deal with Alexandria public? Lose your plausible deniability? Lose your position?
So you're going to be in charge now?
No. It's just that you won't be. Maggie and Sasha are staying. I'm staying. We're all going to be one big, happy, dysfunctional family.
So we will be. And I'll see us through this. I made progress with them today. You saw it.
That's not what I saw.
Yeah, well, it's what happened. We play nice, they play nice. See, dear, Saviors can actually be quite reasonable. It's a fine watch. Doesn't need to be left out in the rain.
This is our home now. So you'll learn to start to call me by my name. Not Marcia, not dear, not honey. Maggie. Maggie Ree.
Aw, I get chills every time.
That brought tears to your eyes.
Oh man, like that hook though, that like punch in the face.
Yeah,
it didn't even phase him.
It's too much of a TV punch. It was too loud.
Yeah, way too loud.
But anyway, it was a good punch nonetheless. And the watch, you know, that's.
Did she punch him for the watch or for what he said? That
for what he said. You
know, yeah.
And also, you know, he deserved it. Mm-hmm. It was everything being built up, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that he had the watch was kind of even worse. Like a grave robber, man.
I know. Like, how disgusting. How disrespectful. Like, that was just ridiculous. I didn't like that. I didn't like how he did that. That's like ultimate, like, if he wasn't a coward before and...
So Jesus says, no, I don't want to be the leader, but I just don't want you to be the leader.
Therefore, we're going to stick together like a dysfunctional family.
With no leader.
So they're gonna share the leadership, all of them?
Okay, Jesus already knows who's gonna be the leader, and I think we all know who's gonna be the leader. It's gonna be Maggie, obviously. Because later on Jesus says to Maggie.
Yeah, because he says, I think that we know what this place needs, and he says, what are you talking about? He's like, we'll talk about it sometime. Yeah, Maggie can totally be the leader.
Maggie says, what do you mean? Like really? Like she didn't really it's like she's pretending not to know. Yeah, right. Mm. She knows. And I mean, even Sasha knows, like, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, so Jesus is basically grooming Maggie to be the leader. So Jesus is changing supporting.
Who he's standing up for. Yes. Yeah. What, he's building his own morals this time.
He used to be with Gregory. Now he's being with Maggie. And even though, you know, Jesus, Maggie, and Sasha never really had a relationship, but I guess all of a sudden Jesus just figures that, well, Maggie and Sasha are the ones that I should be following.
Because they're leaders. Group are leaders.
Yeah, so Jesus is not really a leader. He's the guy who likes to go out and do and scavenge and find things.
He's the right-hand man.
Yeah, he's the right-hand man to whoever is the leader.
He gets things done. He knows how to get things done. He just doesn't want to make the decisions to get things done.
Yeah, he's the sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
But like that does all the work, I guess. And he wants Maggie to be his new leader, and he wants to follow Maggie and do whatever Maggie says. So I think, definitely Gregory is going to be moved to the side. Maggie's going to be the new leader.
Oh, totally, totally.
Yeah. Maggie and Sasha. So Maggie's going to be the leader of Hilltop. Rick is the leader of Alexandria.
Yep. And then Morgan and Carol have to figure out how to side with Ezekiel to get him on board.
Yeah. So I think there's going to be a meeting of Rick. Well, I don't know if Rick is actually going to be the, because he's like, might say no. I think Rick is going to turn around. If Rick finds out that Maggie's leading Hilltop and Ezekiel is out there, Rick is going to change. He's going to say, oh,
okay. Because you remember he said it was just about the numbers.
They don't have the numbers.
That's the only, I remember that because I'm like, that's the only thing that's stopping him. Then he doesn't feel bad that he killed all those people. He just wants to get back at them, but with the right numbers.
He's outnumbered. He's basically saying, we don't have the capability right now to do anything. Mm-hmm. So we need a meeting, a secret meeting of the three of them, of Maggie, Rick.
Overthrow the hierarchy.
Maybe Maggie, Jesus, Rick, Michonne, and Ezekiel with Carol. Like, they all need to get together.
I think Carol and Ezekiel are going to hook up, and so then Ezekiel will do whatever right. Carol wants.
Maybe the meeting will be at Carol's place, at that little hideout that they have outside the skirts, outskirts of the town.
Uh-huh.
That would be cool.
Neutral border. Yeah, yes, I know.
That would be cool, like a secret society meeting of all these of all these leaders of these camps.
Conspiring against a leader.
Sitting around a table.
I hope people are documenting the history that happens in this world, because like when they're in there, like, and then the battle between all three groups came together and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, there's going to be a battle. Definitely. There's going to become a war unless, Negan picks off one by one, the different key players and kills them or traps them. Otherwise, there's going to be a whole thing that's going to happen. So they're going to meet around this table. They're going to have a meeting. They're going to have a map. They're going to plan out the attack and all this stuff. It'll be cool if that's what happens. We'll see. Maybe it'll happen at kind of the final episode of this half season. So I don't know.
I'm excited. I hope something happens. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Enid shows up and Maggie sees her and doesn't.
She lies about, not being able to, not seeing Carl. She says, no, I came here alone. Because she, in the end, will stick up for him. Yeah, so, and like we said before, they talked about how Maggie said, we don't need to remember him by anything. We have us.
Mm-hmm, like what Jesus said.
And they have a prayer.
Mm-hmm. And Maggie's prayer says, for this new morning with its light, Father, we thank thee for rest and shelter of the night. Father, we thank thee for health and food, for love and friends, for everything thy goodness sends. Father in heaven, we thank thee. And it's probably something that her father told her at one point. Mm-hmm. The poem was written by Ralph Waldo Emerson. It's called We Thank Thee. He's an American essayist and poet. He was the leader of the Transcendentalist movement during the 19th century, a movement which believed in the inherent goodness of people. Mm-hmm. Emerson also believed in individualism, the idea of being independent and self-reliant outside of the constraints of a government, of state control. Maggie reciting Emerson's poem was a nod to the fact that Maggie's beliefs of the individual being the focus is in contrast to Negan's totalitarian regime.
Ooh.
So
some parallels there.
If Maggie was actually thinking that deep and analyzing what she was saying, that's probably what she would be thinking, but maybe not.
I don't think so.
Maybe not. Maybe it was just a nice poem.
I think we just have some really educated writers.
Maybe just a nice poem that her father used to tell her.
Yep, and then we have a montage of Sasha sharpening a knife with Abraham's cigar in her mouth.
Which was on him, I guess, when he died.
Yep, and Jesus sneaking on the truck with his Jesus outfit on.
He has a little beanie hat. Carl. He has his hat, his cape. He's like a little super. Yep. He's like a superhero. I when they had the cameras from high showing the trucks driving off, I thought they were going to do like him on top of the truck. Like,
I thought so too. I thought he was going to be on top of the truck too.
Spread eagle or something.
Just like, that's still like movie type though. That's when they do a movie.
He did that with Rick and Daryl when he.
Yeah, he was on top of the car.
He stole their truck.
Or the truck, yeah.
you know, Jesus is very good with trucks and hiding in trucks and
good in tracking.
Yes. when Carl says hey, I thought it was some one of the saviors.
Yeah.
It's like, oh dang it, he got caught.
Who was in the car? I was like, who was in there? And then I was like, oh, okay, it's just Carl. It's Carl being Carl.
Carl, where are you? What are you doing in the truck?
Carl, get back in the house, Carl.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a terrible impression. I'm sorry.
Carl is getting himself in trouble. I think, you know, it's when Rick finds out, I don't know, man. When Rick finds out Carl's gone, he's going to go ballistic.
He's going to go bananas. Yeah. But will he, though? If he succeeds, I don't think so. But if he doesn't succeed, then yeah.
He won't succeed. He'll just get caught. Or Jesus will convince him to leave. We have a voicemail. Let's hear what Malika said. She's a longtime listener, first-time caller. Hey.
Yo.
Hey, Walking Dead girl. This is Malika Tazi from Tucson, Arizona. Longtime listener. Haven't given you guys feedback at all, ever. You guys are great. I just wanted to say that it actually made me want to call you guys and say how thrilled I am that the show is finally getting back on track. I was getting a little worried there with the first four episodes. I was trying to make excuses. Oh, well, it'll get better. It'll get better. Well, now it's better. And hopefully it'll continue. And the ending with Jesus coming in the back of that truck and then all of a sudden Carl pops up, totally shocking to me. But it was a good kind of shock, and I can't wait to see what happens. This is the first time I've been excited about The Walking Dead since, ooh, wow, since maybe JSS, honestly. Well, you guys have a great day, and good luck with the rest of your semester, Jasmine. I'm sure you're doing fabulously. Thank you for putting on a good show and making it entertaining for the rest of us. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Malika.
Thank you, Malika. That was really nice.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, I felt that. Yeah, I felt the same. Like, this episode kind of made me feel better about the show, that it's actually taking a direction. And although I'm kind of worried about Carl and how he's going to last, but I'm glad he's taking action. I'm glad Jesus is going to be part of it too.
Yeah, he's not alone.
Yeah.
So there was quite a few people that were excited about this episode and felt that it was going in the better direction. If I noticed online, there was also, of course, some people that said that some of the dialogue and the scenes were kind of didn't make sense, but were out of character. But I think for the most part, this episode was pretty good. Like I said, one of the scenes in the middle was kind of hokey, where the Enid and Carl thing.
Car crash.
But, you know, I think the key here, the main thing that this episode was trying to get to was that Maggie's leadership role, I think, right?
Yeah.
Trying to make Maggie a leader and put her in the position of changing Hilltop from this quiet, submissive kind of people to more aggressive and fighters. Because I think that's what she's going to turn these people into, right?
Yeah, just like Rick did with, you know, the people at Alexandria. Because now when they're like, why are the saviors coming in? They're more like, what the heck? And not, oh, okay. You know, they have some pride in the fact that they can survive on their own. They don't need help.
Yeah, like how could the saviors come in and light all those fires and let the walkers in without them even knowing?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Like, come on now.
Like, jeez, anybody.
Wake up, people.
Anybody could take them out just like that. That's
exactly. And it proves why. And it proves the point that they're trying to make, that you need our service. Because they target these neighborhoods that have never seen, you know.
That are weak, basically.
Yeah. And says, well, we don't have to do much to get them to go over to our side and do what we want.
And that's why they took all the guns from Rick. And Rick's group, because they want to make them weak. They want to bring them down to the level of Hilltop or something and make them weak. I'm wondering how Ezekiel was able to get a deal where the whole town doesn't have to know about Negan, but only Ezekiel and a small group of people know Negan.
Yeah.
That was kind of weird. I don't know how he pulled that off, but that would be an interesting thing to find out at some point.
But so, overall, this episode was really good. I liked it.
Yeah, and The Walking Dead is not dragging on stories. They're quickly getting to the point.
Yeah, exactly.
They're moving
on. I don't know. Though, yeah, overall, people have been feeling that some people don't watch the show anymore, or they've stopped, or they're getting lazy on catching up because they just feel it's too slow. And I think that's because we've become spoiled, especially with things like Netflix and HBO Go, where you can watch all the seasons at the same time.
All the episodes, too.
The episodes. Exactly. So this is a great season for if you're watching it back to back. But if you're used to watching everything back to back and then having a show that's once a week, you kind of lose interest. And that's a personal problem. I don't think it really has anything to do with the show. So I'm feeling it too, but I still like the show.
It's crazy how the drama outside of the show is greater than the drama on the show. Because I read some websites and the people are ranting like, that's it. I'm giving up on The Walking Dead. And then there was like some big websites like Forbes and New York Times and stuff, the people that do articles where they write articles for like show recaps, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're saying, officially given up writing about The Walking Dead because we hate the show, but we're going to continue writing articles as Walking Dead haters or something. And then the show has to convince us to come back, but they keep writing articles, right? So it's all the drama. It's all this drama.
All this freaking drama, which is good for the show because it makes people be like, what are they talking about? What is so bad about the show? Let me watch it.
Yeah, like join the Walking Dead Haters Club. Like, really? Come on. Just watch the show. It's just a show. Enjoy it. Have fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we have the podcast, we laugh about some things, but, you know, for the most part, we like the show. It's fun. You know, it keeps things interesting. We're excited to see what's going to happen next. Excited about the potential war that's going to happen with all these factions fighting and stuff.
Factions. Ooh, that's a good one.
All these factions. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. Oh, I want to talk about how I saw the Doctor Strange movie.
Oh, you did? What did you think of it?
I thought it was good. I thought it was great. Mr. Cumberbatch was good in the role of Doctor Strange.
You know, it's not Cumberbatch, right?
It isn't.
No, it's Cumberbatch.
Really?
Benedict Cumberbatch. Cumberbatch.
I thought it was Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch.
Johann Sebastian Bach, like that. It's not Johann Sebastian Bach.
But yeah, they're also two different people.
I hear people saying Cumberbatch Batch, and I'm like, no, that's wrong. Why are they saying it that way? But I guess I'm wrong.
Let me find out. I think it's Cumberbatch. That's all everybody have said.
Okay, regardless of his name, he was good. It was good in the movie. Okay.
Oh man, I wish I could see it, but I'm broke.
Yeah. Good. Stay home. I noticed that the movies that are successful primarily don't have a lot of multiple plot lines going on. They focus on a single plot line, like, and a handful of characters, and they focus on that one story and until completion. Mm. The movies, like the Marvel movies or any other kind of, well, mostly the Marvel movies have been good, but other movies that try to throw in multiple plot lines just to give you more for your money kind of thing, end up ruining the movie because you can't focus on any one storyline and you get confused, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this movie was good in that it had this main story of this character who was this Doctor Strange character and followed his origin and how he ended up. And there was just one bad guy and, you know, only two or three other characters supporting characters. Like, it was a very simple story. The special effects were amazing. It had scenes where, like, because he does magic, right?
Yeah.
He has super magical powers. So he makes, like, New York City or London, whatever, transform, like buildings go sideways and upside down and they're walking on
it warps the reality.
Yeah, they walk upside down when they shouldn't be, and they walk on buildings that are up, you know, weird positions, and they collect the bricks and they make other buildings from them magically. So that from that point of view, the special effects were like mind blowing. And I always wonder in these movies though, like the innocent bystanders are like walking by and watching these things, like they never, like, how do they perceive this stuff happening around?
I want to know the side story to the guy who is in that building that when someone walked across it or something, like,
or like
how his life turned out.
No, but they have a scene.
The world is different.
They have scenes where like cars are going off the edge of the cliff, and they're just wrapping around. They're not falling. They're just, there's no.
And what do people do?
It defies gravity, right? They're just going.
Yeah.
In circles or something, some weird kind of, and I'm like, okay, so the cars keep driving, like nobody notices the stuff that's happening around. Like they're just,
this isn't a big deal for people.
You'd think that they would stop and it's like look around, like, hey, what's going on? What's, why is this world upside down? No, they just they don't do anything. So I don't know, that's just whatever. It's a movie. It's a fantastical movie. I guess you have to accept some of that stuff. Maybe they have magical powers that makes everyone like not know what's going on around them. But they also touch another thing that I liked about the movie, because, you know, science has, you know, pondered that and calculated that there's multiple dimensions that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we live in one dimension, but there's other dimensions. There's other Earths. There's other dimensions of the universe that we don't know about. Like when the Big Bang created the universe, it created multiple universes, right? And we're just in one of them.
Yeah.
So this movie explores a little bit of that and basically shows that Doctor Strange has the ability to tap into those other dimensions. Mm. And that's how he brings all these magic into the present. He taps into these other dimensions and brings them in. So anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. No, it's a good movie.
Man, is this a movie review too podcast?
Yes, it's a great movie. Everyone should watch it and have fun. It's one of those movies that you just enjoy the visuals. You should go to a theater because the visuals are so amazing. Like instead of watching it on a tiny screen.
Yeah. Hey, Dad, should you do you want to send me some money so I can go watch it just for, you know, podcast purposes? So I can get my own feedback.
Oh, another movie that I want to see. I've heard a lot of good things about is The Arrival.
I was going to see that, but we had to record a podcast. I was going to go to a private screening of that.
Well, the podcast is more important.
I know.
Obviously.
I know.
I just heard good things about it. It's about aliens coming to Earth. And
that's right. You know, I've never seen the trailers for any of these movies. I'm so busy. I don't even know what Arrival is about. I know Amy Adams is in it because that's all I know. Is this based on an old movie?
I have no idea.
A 96 movie called The Arrival? Because I just saw, I was looking up the poster and I saw this other movie called The Arrival from 1996.
No, I don't think it's the same thing.
With Charlie Sheen.
Oh, I heard of that. I actually saw that one, yeah.
Is it the same?
Back when Charlie Sheen was...
Not crazy?
Was Charlie Sheen. but yeah, I've seen that one. But no, I haven't seen the new Arrival. Anyway, I heard good things about it. So that's one of the movies I want to see during Thanksgiving.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, I hope everyone who celebrates Thanksgiving has a wonderful holiday. And if you don't, take advantage of the wonderful holiday regardless.
Well, we want to thank our fans that are, we were thankful for them.
Life's crazy over here and we're not always together, Dad and I, but we still do the podcast and you guys stick with us and you listen, which I'm really grateful for because it makes me feel like there's still something to cling on to.
It makes us feel important. How about that? It makes us feel important.
Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please tell all your friends and everyone you know. We love to get new subscribers. You can send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive.
Oh, another thing I wanted to tell you about is I spent like 2 hours the other night on YouTube and I went down this weird YouTube hole. But I basically found this channel of these people. What they do is they, I'll send it to you if you have time to waste, but they go on Google Maps. I think they live in Nevada and they find abandoned, like remote, houses and these weird places in the middle of nowhere. Like you'll see like a whole bunch of mountains and then this in the middle of the mountain.
There's
like one house and like, I wonder what that's all about. Right. And then they drive all the way out there and they film it. And basically what it ends up being is these abandoned places.
That people have that. So obviously if there's a video of it, is it like the satellite, is it satellite photos or is it like the Google car drove past?
No, satellite photos. Because the Google car doesn't go there because it's just dirt roads in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But it's very creepy and spooky because the guy is walking around. I think he has a camera on his head or something, and he looks around. And most of these places are like trailer homes, like motorhomes. Mm. Like there was one place where they went, there was like three motorhomes abandoned in the middle of nowhere. The doors were open, the glass was broken. Like it was completely
abandoned.
But they're like in the middle of nowhere. Like why were people living here? Like
obviously,
I don't know.
They would have built it if they didn't plan on living there. Maybe it's just really old. Back to the times where everything was spaced out.
Well,
maybe it was before actual cities.
No. It was just people who drove out in the middle of these motorhomes, drove out there and just started to just park there and just started to live there or something.
Dad, there's almost 10 billion people in the world.
Yeah. Well, it just reminds me of kind of like the apocalypse situation. You know, you would. It's like these people decided to just survive on their own, kind of thing. You know, I don't know. It's just weird. But these places, because they had like newspapers, they would dig through and they would find, and they would.
Wow.
They were like at least 10 years old or something.
Wow.
So they've been there for a long time.
Yeah, send me the link. That'd be interesting. I love that stuff.
Yeah, and there was some. There was other little houses that were like abandoned as well.
Mm.
Like weird things, and there was one that was like really creepy because they were digging through this a pile of papers that were just lying on the ground, and they were reading like these. It was basically a kid's evaluation from his school, and saying, okay. Yeah, this kid has a problem with this class, and he has he doesn't pay attention. And they were like reading through about a list of things that were wrong with him, and they recommended that he would get treatment, whatever. And then they were looking through some papers of, as the kid got older, he would get like, he would be moving to a mental hospital.
And oh my God, this is real?
Yeah. And then they were reading how he was having problems with the drugs and everything. And it looks like it was like a medical history of this kid's life.
Wow.
As he became an adult. And then, as they were walking around, they found these abandoned farm kind of these buildings, and inside the buildings there was these ropes hanging with nooses on them, right in the middle of nowhere.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And they're like, what have we stumbled across here? Is this like a hideout of some crazy person? Yeah, it was really spooky.
These aren't staged. These are real things that
they're things. They're just random places that they just stumbled across in the middle of nowhere. And it's just this guy with I think it's his wife or his daughter. I can't tell. Because at one point he mentions, oh, my daughter's scared or whatever. But yeah, so these weird abandoned places. And I don't know. Some people get a kick out of looking at these things. And I got a kick out of it because I was like watching like, what is going on here? Where is this place?
That's so cool. Would we do something like that, Dad?
You mean go around scavenging?
Yeah, podcasting about it.
I don't know. I would be scared to catch a disease or something from all the weird, because some of the places had like animals, like dead animals, and a lot of rat droppings and stuff.
Oh, Dad, diseases! You know the people in The Walking Dead have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's stuff that I guess you could wear a mask. You can wear a mask when you're scavenging.
Well, we don't have to worry about it because we have people on YouTube who do it for us.
Exactly.
We just get to watch.